Patreon roll call to kick off the show. Thank you so much to Patreon subscribers Laura, Daniel, and Emma. Your support of the show means an absolute bunch. Patreons get access to bonus content from each episode of Cooks, as well as just the warm and fuzzies from supporting the show. For more info, head to patreon.com/cookspodcast. Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
How you going?
Wow. This is a dog.
Ruben. He is the son of the school.
Danny Tran is a very familiar face on ABC News. Most people will recognise him as that slick guy presenting the weather at the end of the 7 o'clock news in Melbourne. He's just a cool guy. I really wanted to call this episode Cool with a Chance of Danny Tran, but alas, my current naming conventions for the podcast wouldn't allow it. But, you know, you can think it in your minds when you're listening to it. He's done all sorts of things as a news reporter. As a court reporter, his work involved confronting some of the most serious crimes that you could possibly imagine. Most recently, he's taken on a new role at a national level as the ABC's national technology reporter, recently reporting on things like AI, cybersecurity, and plenty more. As you'll hear, there is so much to love about Danny Tran. So come into this incredibly well-organized kitchen as Danny Tran cooks. I wasn't happy with my knock, just want you to know. I should have done a strong journalist knock. Danny, this is huge. I'm so pumped that you've had me around to your home today.
This is a great call. I love to cook. It's my favorite thing.
Hey, we should do a podcast together.
Oh my God, we absolutely should. I think that would be great. I think we have a lot to offer the world.
Now, you are just go, go, go. You've already started. I need you to first of all tell me, what are you cooking today?
All right, so I'm making a Japanese curry, which is something that I've always loved to eat. And once I discovered how to make it right, it's just like one of those super comforting meals. I feel like the thing with Vietnamese meals is that, obviously I'm Vietnamese and this is a Japanese curry, is that it's time consuming. It's like definitely like a 4 or 5 hour meal. It's a thing where everyone sort of comes together. It's a multi-hour affair. Mm. Whereas like this is something that I could quickly but still sort of engender those feelings of like comfort food.
Oh yeah.
So now we're washing the rice because we're not animals. So
I need to ask you, first of all, I'm going to out myself.
Yeah.
I am an animal.
Oh my God, please. It's disgusting.
Is this the whitest moment of my life? No, actually, spoiler alert, it's not. There's plenty more. But I don't wash rice because it's time consuming. Please convince me how wrong I am.
It only takes a minute, and see all the white water that's sort of coming out. That's all the stuff, and that's why your rice is like dry and not fluffy.
Yeah,
this is what you want.
Okay.
So I feel like it was something that my grandfather showed me how to do, and I just can't. So my wife Caitlin is Australian, and I have. One of my greatest achievements is convincing her to wash rice. And it actually happened the other day where the dog was feeling a little bit ill. Mm. So we gave it sort of a bland meal with some rice. And I said, did you wash the rice for Ruben, our dog? She goes, of course I did. I'm not an animal. And that's how I knew she was the one.
It's when you got down on one knee.
And that's it. When the water runs clear like that, and I just do it in a bit of a colander, pretty easy. So straight into the rice cooker, which is obviously very handy for people like me. Now, often you'll see on TikTok or Instagram when people are cooking rice in the rice cooker, they stick a finger in and they measure using the finger or the water. It's fucking nonsense.
Oh, really?
It's nonsense because everyone's fingers are different.
I've been going up to one knuckle.
That's what
I thought the whole key was.
The beautiful thing about the Japanese is that they are a very precise people and have markings on the side of the pot. And as a result, it's all there for you. And if the Japanese haven't worked out the ratio, then we're all fucked. So that goes straight in the rice cooker.
But that's just... Sorry.
Tell me.
I have to interject. This isn't just any rice cooker, Danny.
No, it's...
I mean...
It literally has the word microcomputer on it.
It does. So the fuzzy microcomputer.
Fuzzy microcomputer. It's a Panasonic. Again, I'm about that Japanese line.
Oh, yeah.
And you know it's going to be good.
My rice cooker is an absolute piece of shit. And so I think what's going on here is that we have user error and we have bad equipment.
Wowee. Okay, so one thing that I was really wary about
as
I was just about to come in here and do this podcast with you
was
making sure that I hit record. And I'm going to keep on going back to the mixing desk to make sure that that record button has been hit.
It is a level of pain that only journalists know.
Yes. So how often has this happened to you?
Absolutely, it has. And it sucks. And just the thought of like, I had an interview this morning and I just kept being like, if this fails, I am fucked. I am fucked. I would have to do this again. It was an extremely important interview. And I just couldn't be in a situation where... Anyway, here we are. It's just the pain of knowing losing all your work.
You're just for our lovely listeners. You are currently peeling the potatoes.
I'm peeling the potatoes.
We have two potatoes here.
Aggressively.
Now, can I do anything while we chat?
Absolutely not.
How do you feel about guests at your home when you're cooking for them, asking if they can do anything in the kitchen?
I feel offended. No, it's very nice, but no, it's pretty easy.
I feel angry, actually. I get very sort of territorial and it's like, would you get out of my kitchen?
You do have a lovely kitchen.
I don't mind my kitchen.
You have a lovely home. I'm really a big fan.
Thank you so much.
Been there once. It was great.
You can come over anytime.
Oh, thanks.
As long as you cook for me.
Oh, absolutely. What is your meal of choice? What's your cooking meal? What meal do you make to impress people?
So the make to impress people, these days I'm very much about, as much as I love cooking, I'm also about minimal sort of effort and prep for maximum results.
Yeah.
And I think that's come from having three kids now.
Yeah.
So
smart.
The go-to when I'm having people over is like Sunday roast.
Perfect.
So I'll do a roast lamb shoulder with homemade chips and whatever other veggies I can find. But the key to the lamb shoulder is just like there is no cutting involved.
No.
It is literally sprigs of rosemary, heaps of garlic, fresh mint, cover it in olive oil and honey, sprinkle it with some salt and pepper, and then just chuck a lid on and cook it for 4 hours.
Damn.
And it just falls apart.
Like in a crusette type of thing?
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. So you don't need to check on it. You don't need to like, you know, sort of do any basting or there's no water. There's no nothing that
homemade
happens.
Homemade chips.
And homemade chips. Oh. Yeah. Love it. Love a Kipler. Give me a Kipler potato.
Huge fan.
Any day of the week.
Was it lockdown? I got into smoking meats.
Ooh.
And that was a contender for which something that I would do today.
Oh.
However, I did think to myself, like it's a very, like a brisket takes like fucking 14 hours or some nonsense.
Yeah. What exactly happens? How does the smoking of the meats occur? I know nothing about this particular type of food.
So over time, you're exposing it to like certain types of wood, charcoal, things like that.
Mm.
And that slowly not only cooks the meat, sort of breaks down all that connective tissue and fat, but at the same time also imparts like that smoky flavor. Mm. So that's when you're sort of cutting it and you get that smoke ring on it, which is like that sort of, you cut open the brisket, all the crust is out of it, and then you see a red ring around it, that's the smoke.
Right.
And then you're sort of flavouring it as well with different spices, with different like salt, pepper for the brisket or something like, I like to use a spice blend from this Pitmaster in North Carolina and it's just great. Like it has paprika, MSG, salt, pepper, chili powder. I like to mix it up. I add gochugaru, which is like the Korean chili powder, which is or red pepper powder.
What are your thoughts on MSG?
Love it. It's the best. I think it's all the fear around it was derived from racism.
That was the contention of, what cooking show was it?
Salt, fat, acid?
Yeah. And I found that mind-blowing because I was brought up to fear MSG, not knowing that MSG is naturally occurring in some products.
Yeah, and it, don't worry, we'll be using it today.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, that type of advertising really unfortunately worked on my parents as well and on a lot of members of the Asian community. You see a lot of the restaurants, for example, in Richmond or Springvale, big signs, no MSG. It's a remnant of white Australia.
In what way?
I think it was about, you know, they had a lot of refugees, a lot of immigrants coming through to Australia at the point in time. And it was fundamentally, it's saying your food is lesser than ours. Your food is unknown. You're using ingredients or things that we deem as unacceptable or disgusting in some way or another. You sort of see it, and unfortunately, a little bit these days as well. That's basically, I feel like, the root of that. If we go back to the absolute principles, it was the otherness that they were objecting to.
Yeah, I don't actually know what form MSG comes in.
Well, my friend, after I finish cutting this potato, you're about to see.
Are we going to do lines of MSG?
Well, it does look like a bag. Take a look. Oh, that is, it looks like salt.
It does.
It looks like salt. It's just the grains are much more perfect.
Yeah, it's like very sort of crystallized.
Salt. You basically use it and you mix it, and you can taste an instant difference. Now, I probably should have asked you. You're not allergic to MSG, are you? Because some people are.
Not that I know.
Not that you're not.
So we'll find out.
Now, I don't use as much as the restaurants sometimes, if they were to use it, which is, I don't have a problem with them using it. It's just that if you use heaps and heaps and heaps, you're super thirsty.
Now, you're peeling some garlic cloves. You're about to give them a little chop or a little crush.
Yeah.
So we've got four garlic cloves here. You've chopped up two potatoes and a carrot. And I like the choppage and two onions. And the choppage is not diced.
No, it's a Japanese type of chopping. I can't remember the name of it, but you basically roll the carrot and it's all in different shapes. It's just quite pleasant to put in your mouth.
Yes. Danny, the other night I saw a report from you, right?
I know the one you're mentioning.
I saw your news package where you were talking about AI and your piece to camera at the end. Can you describe to me what you did? Because I thought it was just one of the most creative things I've seen.
So I got
a news journalist do.
AI to imitate my voice, and then I mimed my piece to camera with the AI using my voice.
We might even play a little bit of it.
Yeah, do. So here you go.
Right here. Have a little listen.
He says there should be a government agency licensing who can create AI, safety standards which make sure the technology doesn't create dangerous or fake content, and audits to make sure everyone is following the rules.
What you're hearing right now isn't actually my voice. We're using AI technology that's already available on the internet and takes less than a minute. It's not perfect. It's a little British, but it shows how powerful these tools already are. Danny Tran, ABC News.
It took so many takes. It was extremely tedious because even though I was miming, I kept fucking it up. And it was an absolute nightmare. But it got an incredible response because people were like, I can't believe that was you. Because in the first couple of seconds, it did sound a bit like me.
It did.
Yeah. But then it became really Britishy. I don't think they have the samples to get the Australian voice quite right.
Yeah. I love how in scripting it, you preempted the point at which your voice ended up sounding, or the AI version of your voice started sounding too British. You built that into the script.
Well, we had to acknowledge it because otherwise it was this situation when you're like, well, that sounds a bit weird. Because if you knew me, like, you'd be like, you do stop putting on airs, is what an Australian would say. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. To me, watching that, I'm like, this is what news can be. Like, it doesn't have to just be straight reporting. You can have some fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
It got me thinking, I'm like, how often do you get to be creative and have that sort of playfulness in your reporting?
More so now in this job because it involves less tragedy.
Being a technology reporter.
Yeah, yeah. Before, not so much. Like, you'd be able to express things in a certain way that drew attention to the narrative and the storyline. But a lot of the times you just weren't able to, because when I say it drew attention to, I mean, like, you know, the drama or the sadness or the happiness or the creativity. You can draw attention to those types of things, but sometimes you just couldn't. Like, the crimes are too bad.
Yeah, you're not exactly going to be having a lull or a real creative moment or moment of levity when you're reporting on a serious crime.
No.
But things do seem to be changing with the way that news is reported, and even actually the presentation, the physical presentation of news journos on the TV.
Yeah.
Like, so ABC, even just like the most basic level, change the dress code.
Yeah. So I, for example, used to, you know, wear a full suit and tie, and I'm pretty sure I was one of the first to stop wearing a tie altogether.
When was that?
That was in 2018. Because I remember thinking at the time, I was like, oh, this is a big deal. No, everyone else still wears a tie. Most people on the commercial channel still do wear a tie. It's hard to break out of something that is so ingrained within the industry.
You're listening to Cooks. We'll be back to Danny's kitchen in just a sec. If you've made it this far, I'm assuming that you're enjoying the show. So if you wouldn't mind, I'd love if you could give us a nice rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you're absolutely loving it, why not leave the show a delightful review? I'll even stretch out this musical interlude for you to do it. Okay, that's enough. Back to Danny's kitchen.
You have thrown something into a hot pot.
I've put in the onions. Oof.
Just immediately, that smell, just transports me somewhere.
Oh, man.
Where are you right now? When you get that smell of onions and garlic in the pot, where are you?
I'm back home in my family kitchen and smelling it like my grandma cooking. And I'm adding in sliced belly, beef. Mm. So this is the stuff that they give you at hot pot restaurants.
Right.
Right, those really thinly sliced pieces of meat. And I've experimented with this recipe where they've used chunks of chicken, chunks of beef, but this just breaks down and then very suddenly it's in this like incredible sauce. And like these smells, like they just take you back. That's why I love fragrances so much, right? It connects you to a single part of your life or a certain time. You'll never, if you smell it, you'll just be taken there whether you want to or not.
The number of times that I smell something outside and for some reason I'm transported to Sovereign Hill.
Really?
It'll be Sovereign Hill and I'm like 4 years old.
So what is it about Sovereign Hill?
I think I must just have heaps of happy memories there with my family.
Now tell me about Sovereign Hill and why it's the happiest moment of your life.
I'll start with the smells.
Yeah.
So there's like, usually it would be the smell of an open fire, but it'll be someone else's open fire.
Mm.
So around autumn time, when people start lighting their fires,
so good.
And you walk outside and you get that smell on like, it's carried on that like really cold air. That smell, you get the smell of like rotting autumn leaves and that kind of thing.
I just love that.
Instantly, I can hear my feet like crunching along the gravel at Sovereign Hill. And then there's this particular smell that they had in the lolly shop there.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about. Yeah, and it's so like, well, the moment you said it, I am there.
Yeah.
I just am.
Sovereign Hill was played a role in your childhood?
Well, we went there, but it's like one of the most, we had a camp there and it's one of the most like vivid memories of my life.
Mm.
I don't know why. It's just, it's a weird place. It was so cold. Then I realized I ended up living there like years later.
Most Victorians will know all about Sovereign Hill. If you're not from Victoria, you won't. But you're basically stepping onto, it's in the gold fields.
Yeah.
And you're stepping onto, it's like you've walked onto a movie set in a Western. I just remember as a kid, like it feels so real. All the people walking around are dressed up in clothes from the mid-1800s.
It's odd.
No one breaks character.
It's weird.
It's like Disneyland, but of the Gold Rush.
It's Victorian Disneyland.
Have you been back since?
No, only for a story, actually.
Okay.
But I am looking forward to like one day, like taking a kid there and just being like, hey man, I remember this part. There was definitely no gold then and there's definitely no gold now.
Was it a really dark story? It was like someone got stabbed in the lolly shop.
Oh, it was actually a horrible abuse story.
God, does this job do that to you? Do you just find yourself just like coming up against darkness, against darkness, against darkness?
Yeah, man. Like it definitely, the Royal Commission, but that was the first time I experienced post-traumatic stress. I've experienced many times since then.
Okay.
I'm just adding curry blocks. So this is from the Asian supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
The one that most people know would be S&B Golden Curry.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is another one, also S&B, called Tasty Curry Sauce Mix. I like to mix the two.
I like that it's called Tasty Curry Sauce Mix.
Sauce Mix is everything that you need to know. It's literally everything that you need to know about tasty curry and sauce.
That's right. I'm looking for a sauce mix. What sort? Well, I want it to be curry. Yeah, but do you want it to be disgusting or to be tasty? No,
tasty
I
curry.
Think I prefer tasty. So have we gone from tasty curry sauce mix to PTSD? So it was the Royal Commission.
Yeah.
And this is something that I'm assuming is an occupational hazard of your line of work. Right.
Yeah, like, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that you start off as a reporter and everyone, particularly in this job, was just like, look, you be careful because it could change you. And I was like, nah, I didn't believe that. Mm. Why would it change me? I was invincible and how wrong I was.
Mm.
So now I, for example, I can't watch crime. I was watching a show the other, maybe a couple of months ago, and I didn't realise this was coming, but there was a depiction of child sex abuse. Mm. Couldn't sleep. Like it really is like a lot for me now.
Yeah.
Particularly that.
Yeah.
But, you know, you play a role and the role is a role in society. So let's go straight into the pressure cooker.
That is a real good sound that my appliances don't make.
So now it will seal it or add pressure to it.
Mm.
And then from that pressure, it will cook at a really high and intense temperature and achieve what we can do in several hours in 15 minutes.
Do you cook to relax?
Yeah, I do. I really like it. I really just find it really nice to eat something nice that you've made.
And is that what you've grown up with?
It's a big connection to culture for me, because I don't have too great of a connection to culture. Like, my parents kept me away from the community. They just didn't want to participate in the community. Yeah, okay. It's different, you know. Our family's northern, most of the Vietnamese in Australia are southern.
Yeah.
You know, it's the difference between the American North and South in terms of the same language, but accent, culture, and I wasn't kept in there. And as a result, yeah, it would be like someone in New York spending the rest of their lives in the Deep South.
Yeah, straight after the Civil War.
Straight after the Civil War.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it's unusual. It's unusual. It's difficult. And the connection to culture was something that would. Didn't really happen. I spent a lot of time pretending that I was white or wanting to be white and thinking that, you know, if I didn't acknowledge it, it didn't happen. Clearly that did not work out. But food has always been a strong connection to culture because it transcends all of that. It's my connection, even though my language is shit, my understanding of culture is shit. I do understand the food. And my connection to that is really, found that's extended into other Asian type of cuisines, which is what I prefer to cook because it's my connection to the rest of our people.
The way of building flavour in different cuisines is something that, like, as I get older, because I just grew up in a household where there's lots of cooking, like, I learnt being basically my mum's sous chef, and she was all about, it's like, you're building flavour, you're layering flavour, you save every dripping from every pan, like, she'd chuck that into the freezer. And so learning, like, her ways of cooking and building flavour there to then growing up and trying different cuisines and trying to learn about how to build flavour with from food from different cultures. It's always a new frontier for me, I find, because there are such different ways to build that flavour. Like, interestingly, so many come back to, like, starting with an onion.
Yeah.
But there's other ways of, like, even, like, with Indian cuisine, where you might be starting with dry spices and wet spices and getting a head around how to start a dish like that. If you're looking at Vietnamese cooking, are there any sort of, you know, similar basic starting points where it's like you chuck this in the pot first?
You look at something like pho and you sort of always start off with boiling the bones. You skim off all that grime and that grossness. You get that clear broth and then my parents don't do this. I think that they should do this and we disagree on this fact. They toast their onion and their ginger over, they should toast their onion ginger over open flame. They don't. And then you scrape all off of the burnings and then you toast the spices in a pan. You put that all together in the pot and you cover it with water and then you start building that stock over hours and hours and hours.
Ah.
A lot of the stock. So heaps of the Vietnamese restaurants there in Australia at the moment, the pho shops, they've been open since, you know, after the fall of Saigon, right?
Yeah.
It's the same master stock that they're topping up. The flavours that you're getting now are the flavours that you got back then.
How does that work? Talk me through a master stock.
From my very limited understanding, I think that basically they top it up and re-season it when it gets low. So it's the same type of flavour over time. They're building it back to a consistency that, you know, let's say you imagine that you're making cordial and you always have one part cordial, 10 parts water, and you're running low on the cordial and you never let the cordial run out. You just add a little bit more of the cordial and a little bit more of the water to top it up, and it's the same concentration as it goes through. And it's effectively that flavour stays the same over time. There's a big difference between southern pho and northern pho. The southern ones are the one mostly in Australia that you get. Big, bright flavours, it's a sweeter broth, you know, it's very delicious. Whereas the places, there are more places opening in Victoria at the moment with northern style pho, which is much more subtle. You eat it with pickled garlic and a bit of chili.
No bean shoots, is that right?
I think they don't eat with bean shoots from memory. I can't remember. Don't hold me to it. I'm sorry, my people. But
we'll be taking complaints.
Yeah. But they'll have, like, for example, there are, like, you go to Vietnam and there are Chinese donuts on the table that you can sort of, like, you know, have with your pho. It's just a different way of eating it. But that's when I talk about culturally, the difference between the two.
Who was the cook in your family?
It was most of my, I didn't really learn from either of my parents, actually. My grandmother cooked a lot. I really liked her cooking. But when I came out of home, I didn't know how to cook at all. It was actually Caitlin, my wife, who was like, you know, I'll buy you a cookbook. Here's how you get started. And then I lived alone and I had to move away for work. I moved to Tasmania, I moved to Ballarat, and I was a woeful cook. I was not very good. But then I literally just did it every day, and then I really got into, like, eating. It was like I just really got into cooking and seeing if I could replicate things and putting it together, and then the next minute here I am. I've got a drawer full of knives. I've got, like, we got a specific stove with a wok burner. We've got a cast iron wok. Like, this is just like,
you got meat clip here.
Yeah.
Because I stepped into this kitchen and I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, I'm in the cook's kitchen.
This is the best. This is the best. It's so easy to cook. We've got a walk-in pantry and just the best. So learning, the basics I got from my wife. I didn't really get a lot from my parents. Got a little bit from my grandparents, just seeing bits and pieces, but a lot of this is just fiddling about and having fun and seeing how I go. Look how hot the top of that pot is. That's the pressure.
Jesus. When you're cooking, what's your go-to? You got a whole afternoon, let's say it's a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I haven't done it for a while, but I would probably, like, smoke some meat. Like, I'd smoke a pork belly. Mm-hmm. So I'd take off the layer of the pork skin, and then I put it in a rub, and then I put it over, like, maybe something like cherry wood or apple wood, and I'll do that for a couple of hours. Then I get it out, it's like all jiggly, and you slice it and put it into tacos.
Oh yeah, baby.
That's what I'll do. Or I'll probably make these days a lasagna, which I've been really enjoying. Just been looking for a different lasagna recipe. So there's Alimentari in Smith Street, which is the one that the lasagna that I use. It's a pork and fennel lasagna. There's the 1-800 lasagna one, but that looks, it would take forever.
That looks insane.
It really does. I'm actually leaning towards this Bourdain one with chicken livers.
Oh, wow.
So I might see how it goes.
The 1-800 lasagna is off the charts good.
Yeah.
It's so, like, garlicky and, like, rich.
It would be heckers to make.
Yeah, the number of steps required is too much for lasagna.
You need 5 different types of meat.
Yeah, that's right. Just relax.
Yeah. Like, it's certainly not, like, I was speaking to a friend about it, and she was saying that, oh, look, that's the type of lasagna that you make to say that you've made lasagna. I'm like, oh, yeah. You know what? It's a really pertinent point.
Italian?
Yeah, it's a really pertinent point.
Yeah.
Whereas if Venturi's lasagna, the chef of Attica, I haven't tasted it. Another friend of mine swears by it. I can't find a recipe, but I found a recipe for his bolognese online that is a little bit simpler, but I think I might just stick with Bourdain's one. His looks pretty simple.
All right, here we go.
So this is the pressure cooker's done cooking, as you can tell from the beeping.
Yeah, baby.
There's a shitload of pressure in there at the moment. I would not lift it up, but what I will do, this is not recommended. I'm gonna not release the pressure naturally by putting a tea towel over and venting the steam.
Oh, there we go. So what, you would otherwise just be leaving
it,
that?
Well, normally it releases the pressure naturally, but I am not going to do that.
Oh, that smell. That smells incredible. It smells kind of like sweetness.
Yeah.
That onions or something.
So, not let people know, but the ingredients you add next to it sort of add a bit of flavor. Some people add dark chocolate.
Oh, really?
A common thing to add is tomato sauce,
no.
Which is great. I'll probably add a little bit of oyster sauce and a bit of soy sauce.
I'm just, like, blowing the steam into my face.
Yeah. Do you see how much is in there?
Oh, it's nuts.
Crazy, right?
So there's only 15 minutes of cooking, and we're going to see what's happening here quite shortly. It's reveal time.
So you put the roux on top so it doesn't burn.
Oh, wow.
So now I will mix that through. See the meat's sort of broken up.
That looks amazing.
And that's how you get the potatoes to be, to get that soft, and the carrots as well.
Oh, the potatoes have gone like really yellow.
Soft as, right?
Let's have a little taste of
we'll
the sauce.
We'll taste it and then we'll season it.
Oh, yum.
That's pretty good.
Oh, it's insane.
So I'm going to add.
Oh, a nice little spice in there.
A bit of spice. I actually don't think it needs the soy, to be honest. Maybe a dash.
Man, and the sauce is like really gelatinous.
Yeah.
Love that word. Just any excuse. As I was on my way over, I'm like, if I can get the word gelatinous, get gelatinous in there today, then I'm done.
Probably won't add the oyster. I don't think it needs the extra umami, but I will add the MSG.
Hang on. So this is without the MSG.
Yeah.
It already tastes like good.
That's how it tastes without the MSG. So
okay.
Now I'm going to add the MSG. Goodness. Let's give it a stir.
Oh my God, look at this. You've just served up, oh my God, a bowl of the most delicious looking curry.
How hungry are you?
I'm always hungry.
Sick.
Okay, I'm going to have a little taste of this. Oh my God. Oh wow.
Very comforting.
Oh man, yeah, that is like a hug that starts in your mouth and goes down to your tummy and then comes out your ears. Jesus, that's one of the most comforting mouthfuls of food I've ever had in my life.
So because of the pressure from the pot, you can sort of just, it breaks up the potatoes and the carrots so quickly in 15 minutes.
These potatoes are like they've been cooked for like 3 hours.
Yeah. It's just so efficient.
So much of my focus when I've been recording this has been me being amazed at a pressure cooker. An unfair amount of the focus of my questioning has been, so tell me about this pressure cooker.
Instant Pot Man, sponsor me.
You obviously made this a million times before. How does this one that we're gobbling now compare to your standard? Because to me, this is mind-blowing.
I'm happy with it. I mean, I do fuck up every now and then. Like, just like, I'll try a new recipe. Like, the other night, what did I try? I tried a samosa pie. That was a mistake.
What's a samosa pie?
It was a samosa in the form of a pie. As the name, it was terrible. It was not good.
Samosas are responsible for one of my proudest moments for an unbelievable dad joke that came to me in the split second.
Go on.
So I was around at my friend's parents' house. They're having a bit of a bash. His mum was walking around with a tray of samosas. And she said, "Samosas?" And I said, "Oh, look, it's the hostess with samosas."
That's hilarious.
And she legitimately nearly wet her pants. Now, I think that we should wrap up so we can focus on this delicious, delicious curry. Danny, it's been a goddamn honour coming around here. Thank you for cooking for me.
Thank you for coming and eating my food and then praising me about it, which is clearly a feedback cycle.
I'm willing to continue this feedback cycle as long as we live.
That's Cooks. Thanks for listening.
It is delicious.
So cool. That is, I think it's the best thing I've ever eaten in my life.
That's very nice.
Oh,